Engel, Oladamare, Jenyami, Olorun, God, Jehovah, Allah, Amun-Ra, the many names for the original ancestor, the ancestor who sees all and knows all, the creator of the heavens and the earth. We do not pour libation to you, but this morning we come pouring libation in memory and honor of our ancestors and asking them to intercede with you on our behalf. We know that our ancestors, being in the spirit world, are closer to you, and there's a greater opportunity that our requests will be granted. We ask this morning that you grant the listeners the willingness to open their hearts and their minds to the information that's going to be shared, such that they will hear the truth and then be able to act on the truth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors from Mother Africa, the ancestors who were the beginning of the human family that we now have, no matter what your ethnic or cultural background is, the beginning of human life as we know it was on the African continent. Every person on the face of the earth has as their original ancestor an African. We ask those Africans who were the first to conceive of a family, the first to plant a seed, the first to till the land, the first to domesticate animals, the first to navigate the mighty Nile River to Egypt, the first to build a skyscraper, the first to do surgeries, the first to explore the wonders of the galaxy, and as importantly, the first to conceive of the belief in one God. We ask those ancestors to come and be with us today, to bring their wisdom, their hard work, their ingenuity to all that we do. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors who were murdered, displaced, diminished during our great Holocaust, our great Miafa, we do not forget you. We remember your unwilling sacrifice as your bodies are lined the Sahara and the Atlantic Ocean. We remember you, and we honor you, and we ask that you come and be with us today. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. We ask our ancestors who gave us the great document, the Ma'at, to come be with us, bring your additional sense of honor and integrity as embodied by Ma'at to our discussions and our listenings this morning. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To those ancestors from the Caribbean islands, from Brazil, from the southern parts of these United States, who through your unpaid labor laid the groundwork for the civilizations that are enjoyed by billions of people around the world. To those ancestors, we say we do not forget you. We remember your sacrifice, your hard work. And we ask that you come and be with us today to inspire us to also do the work required to correct a world that has gone mad. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And to those ancestors who are yet to be born, those ancestors for whom we do good work, those ancestors to whom we pledge to honorably do righteous work all the time for ourselves, for our families, for our communities, so we can be correct to be able to benefit from the largesse that the Creator has provided for all of us. Ancestors, we pledge ourselves to continue to do work such that when you return, this place will be a better earth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And finally, we'd like to ask you and our audience to think of one of your ancestors, someone who you would like to be with us this morning. On the count of three, ask that ancestor to come and be with us. One, two, three. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation, libation, libation. It is good.
That people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Justice and equality. I want it for you and curtain now, now. People want a little food to eat. People want better housing. People need money, money. People need equality. People need understanding. People need freedom. And you better
to look at love, though, all the versions of love, there is the need to see, love for what might seem to be unlovable. You all know that black Americans for centuries were obliged to laugh when they weren't tickled and to scratch when they didn't itch. And those gestures have come down to us as Uncle Tommy. However, I believe people live in direct relation to the heroes and sheroes they have. Always and in all ways. And I don't think we often enough stop to wonder, how did that black man feel when his throat would start to ache? And every person in this auditorium knows that feeling. When you must cry, but you won't. And you hold yourself, and then these muscles get sore. Each time that black man had to say, "Yes, sir, boss, you're right, I must be stupid, yes, sir." So he could make enough money so he could go home and feed somebody. Or that black woman who said, "No, ma'am, Miss Ann, you didn't hurt me when you slapped me. I ain't tender-hearted, sure ain't, no, ma'am." So she could make enough money so she could go home and send somebody to school. I think that we live in direct relation to the heroes and sheroes we have. And sometime at some place inside our hearts, we've got to say thank you. Because I don't know about any of you, but I wouldn't be here this evening had those people not been successful in the humiliating employment of those humiliating ploys. Yes, sir. So, I honor them, and in honoring them, I honor all our ancestors who tried to stay alive and be somebody so that we could be here this evening and try to accept that we've been loved, each of us, maybe by somebody three generations ago who never even thought what name you would carry, that they paid for you already. To look at that condition, I wrote a poem about a woman who is a maid in New York City. She sits at the back of the bus with two shopping bags, black. If the bus stops abruptly, she says, "Ah, ha, 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 ha." If it stops slowly, "Ha, ha, ha, ha." Picks up somebody, "Ha, ha, ha." Misses somebody. I watched her for about 9 months. And I thought, if you don't know black features, you may think that woman is laughing. She wasn't laughing. She was simply extending her lips and making a sound. I thought, oh, I see. That's that survival apparatus at work. So I wrote a poem for her. I use it with DePaul Lawrence Dunbar's poem, Mask, and my own poem for old black men. This is love. When I think about myself, I almost laugh myself to death. My life has been one great big joke, a dance that's walked, a song that spoke. I laugh so hard, I nearly choke when I think about myself. 70 years in these folks' world, the child I works for, calls me girl, I say, yes, ma'am, for working sake. I'm too proud to bend and too poor to break, so I laugh until my stomach ache when I think about myself. My folks can make me split my side. I laugh so hard I nearly died. The tales they tell sound just like lying. They grow the fruit, I eat the rind. I laugh until I start to cry when I think about myself and my folks and the little children. But we wear the mask that grins and lies. It shades our cheeks and hides our eyes. This debt we pay to human guile. With torn and bleeding hearts, we smile and mouth with myriad subtleties. Why should the world be overwise in counting all our tears and sighs? Nay, let them only see us while we wear the mask. We smile, but oh my God, our tears to thee from tortured souls arise. Oh, we sing, hey, baby, hey, baby, hey, baby, hey, baby. The clay is vile beneath our feet, and long the mile. Let the world think otherwise. We wear the mask. My fathers sit on benches. Their flesh count every plank. The slats leave dents of darkness deep in their withered flank, and they nod like broken candles, all waxed and burnt profound. They say, but baby, it was our submission, and that made your world go round. There in those pleated faces, I see the auction block, the chains and slavery's coffles, the whip and lash and stock. My father speak in voices that shred my fact and sound. They say, but sugar, it was our submission that made your world go round. They laughed to shield their crying. They shuffled through their dreams. They step and fetched a country and wrote the blues in screams. I understand their meaning. It could and did derive from living on the ledge of death. They kept my race alive by wearing the mask.
Hello, my name is Nawanda Chambers, co-host of the Black Reality Think Tank, and I am coming to you with a public service announcement about the COVID-19 blues. Has COVID-19 got you down? Are you unsure of what to do to protect yourself? Stressed out because you do not know how to manage the new challenges that COVID-19 has created? Are you experiencing symptoms? Are you afraid? Do you need help with something else? If you answer yes to any of these questions, contact the crisis line at 1-800-985-5990 or text Talk With Us to 66746. Remember, there is help, and let's stay safe.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings to all of you, my brothers and sisters. Welcome to the weekend edition of the Black Reality Think Tank. I am so honored to be here this afternoon with all of you, our guests. We always appreciate you. We appreciate your patronage and your continued support of the Black Reality Think Tank. The Invisible Man, the Rise and Fall of the Black Man. This is our topic for today. We have a wonderful group of my co-workers and my co-hosts, Ms. LaWanda Chambers and Ms. Leola Williams, who will be leading that discussion with you very, very shortly. As you know, we are here every Saturday afternoon at 3 p.m. Central Time. This is our weekend edition. And following this program at 6 p.m. Central Time, we have Let the Elders Speak, which is also a second weekend edition program that we talk about issues where the elders get a chance to express their ideas and concerns for our community. And there are many today, and so we really need this format. At the top of the hour today, I have a very special announcement that I want to give, but I don't want to prolong our opening of the program. I want to make sure that the top of the hour, you are able to hear this. This is very dynamic. I am so happy and pleased to be a part of something of this nature. So I will share that with you at the top of the hour. There are other programs that we produce, particularly in the Black Reality Think Tank family. There's a Tuesday program that airs from 7 to 9 Central, which is hosted by myself. And there is another program that will be airing on Thursday from 6 to 8, which is a group of young millennials who will be coming on starting this Thursday, hopefully. And they'll be dealing with issues relating to the African-American experience as it relates to children and families and communities and all of that good stuff. And then there are other programs which are part of this network, this network that we are on. We are on the timeforanawakening.com platform, which is a part of the Black Talk Radio Network .com. And so we are a part of those two systems. And we are so happy. They have a program on Friday. And Sundays, Friday, they're there from 8 to 10. It's called Time for an Awakening. And that's Brother Elliot, who is the director and the founder of the timeforanawakening.com network. And then on Sunday, they're there again from 7 to 10. And this is Eastern Time. And then on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we have the program that is designed by Motherland Media called African Perspectives, Brother Oshiemi Adelabu. That's every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, broadcasting out of Atlanta. So we'll tell you more about those as we go along. So as I said, I do not want to prolong our program today. Very dynamic program, The Invisible Man, The Rise and Fall of the Black Man. So with that, I will introduce our audience now to Ms. Leola Williams and Ms. LaWanda Chambers. Good evening, ladies.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us on our podcast today.
Good evening, Dr. Rogers.
Good afternoon, sir.
Before we get started into our program talking about the Invisible Man, we always like to start out with our ancestral profile. So today I would like to introduce Ms. Fannie Lou Hamer, who was an African-American civil rights activist who led voting drives and co-founded the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. Born into a Mississippi sharecropping family, Fannie Lou Hamer spent much of her life in the cotton fields. She became involved with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee in 1962, through which she led voting drives and relief efforts. In 1964, she co-founded and ran for Congress as a member of the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, drawing national attention to their cause at the year's Democratic Convention. Hammer continued her activism through declining health until her death in 1977. Hammer was born Fannie Lou Townsend on October 6, 1917, in Montgomery County, Mississippi, the youngest of 20 children. Her parents were sharecroppers in Mississippi Delta area, and Hammer began working in the fields when she was only 6 years old. Around the age 12, Hammer dropped out of school in order to help full-time and help out her family. She continued to work as a sharecropper after her 1944 marriage to Perry Papp Hammer. The couple toiled on a cotton plantation near Ruleville, Mississippi, eventually adopting children. Hammer was unable to have children of her own while undergoing surgery to remove a tumor. She was given a hysterectomy without her consent. In the summer of 1962, Hammer made a life-changing decision to attend a local meeting held by the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which is SNCC, who encouraged African Americans to register to vote. On August 31st, 1962, she traveled with 17 others to the county courthouse in Indianola to accomplish this goal. They encountered opposition from local and state law enforcement along the way. Only Hammer and one other person were allowed to fill out an application. Such bravery came at a high price for Hammer. She was fired from her job and driven from the plantation she had called home for nearly two decades, just for registering to vote. But these actions only solidified Hammer's resolve to help other African Americans get the right to vote. According to the New York Times, she said, "They kicked me off the plantation. They set me free. It's the best thing that could happen. Now I can work for my people." Hammer became a community organizer for the SNCC in 1962 and dedicated her life to the fight for civil rights. She spearheaded voter registration drives and relief efforts, but her involvement in the civil rights movement often left her in harm's way. During the course of her activist career, Hammer was threatened, arrested, beaten, and shot at. In 1963, after she and other activists were arrested, she was beaten so badly in Wyoming, Mississippi jail that she suffered permanent kidney damage. In 1964, Hammer helped found the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, established in opposition to her state's all-white delegation to that year's Democratic Convention, and announced her bid for Congress. Although she lost the Democratic primary, she brought the civil rights struggle in Mississippi to the attention of the entire nation during a televised session at the convention. Along with her focus on voter registration, Hammer set up organizations to increase business opportunities for minorities and to provide child care and other family services. She helped establish the National Women's Political Caucus in 1971. Diagnosed with breast cancer in 1976, Fannie Hammer continued to fight for civil rights. She died on March 14, 1977. In a hospital in Mound Bayou, Mississippi. Hundreds crowded into a Ruleville church to say goodbye to this tireless champion for racial equality. Andrew Young, then as a U.S. delegate to the United Nations, delivered a eulogy in which he declared that the progress of the civil rights movement had been made through the sweat and blood of activists like Hammer. Thank you, guys. And that's what we're challenged with today. So before we get into the discussion about the invisible man or our inabilities to rise above where we are, I will allow Ms. Chambers to come in and give her commentary. Thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you for that, Ms. Leola. That is awesome. And I really enjoy hearing about Ms. Fannie Lou. So hello all, my name is LaWanda Chambers, co-host of the Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition. And I hope everyone had an amazing Juneteenth yesterday and was able to celebrate their liberation in some way that was special to them. Today, we are going to discuss why our Black men continue to be killed, not only by the police, but by each other. We'll be looking at the concept of invisibility as it pertains to African Americans and how this contributes to self-hate, mental stress, identity, and achieving goals in life. This evening, we will be leading a discussion, starting off with a quote from Ralph Ellison, very good book, The Invisible Man. And the quote says this: "Beware of those who speak of the spiral of history. They are preparing a boomerang. Keep a steel helmet handy." Leola, I ask you this. What does this mean to us as we are always discussing strategies and having a verbal judo to combat life challenges? What do you think of that?
Chambers, repeat what you said.
Okay, no problem. I said tonight we'll be focusing on a quote from Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man. And the quote said, "Beware of those who speak of the spiral of history. They are preparing a boomerang. Keep a steel helmet handy." What does this mean to us as we are always discussing strategies and having a verbal judo to combat life's challenges? And I mean, even just hearing that about Invisible Man, but also reflecting on the great words from Maya Angelou. I mean, we really just listened to that great rendition of what our life is, you know, what it's like to try and go out in this world and be successful. We're looking at invisibility from several lenses. And I'm sure the audience, when it comes time for them to chime in, they'll also be able to add some to this discussion of invisibility. We can touch bases on the crimes against all the Black men. I mean, most recently, we were just talking about George Floyd and Breonna Taylor just last week, and then, you know, the media, we got more Black men dying to the hands of white men. So let's talk about that invisibility. What does that mean?
Well, currently, you know, I see things as invisible by not having a voice to voice how we feel, what we think. We're still struggling with the same things that our ancestors fought for and died for and were beaten for. We continue to remain silent about things that we know are wrong, things we are afraid to change. We still operate on survival mode. We still have to sneak and do certain things for fear of being cut out, being terminated from our jobs, being removed from our homes, or different things that go on in our lives. Our children continue to face the disadvantage of the educational system and our voting rights being taken or being trampled on once again by voter suppression. So we have to continue to struggle to find the voice. And sometimes and oftentimes, we have to find the voice for the voiceless and be that voice, even though we may put ourselves in jeopardy of losing something. But the fact is, if we die for something, we lose everything. So it used to be the phrase where it say either you're going to fight for something or fall for anything. But now people have gotten to a certain point where they're afraid to fight for the simple things because of fear that they may be punished or they may lose something. Again, reading from Ralph Ellison about, and he said that I'm a man with substance, a man with flesh and bone, with fiber and liquids. I might even be said to possess a mind, but yet I am still I am still invisible simply because people refuse, and this is my word, to see us as black people. So they still hold on to that thought that we are one third of or less than. But today I challenge people as we get into this discussion about your invisibility. How are you invisible? How do you yourself? What do you bring to the table? What are you willing to sacrifice in order to make that change? As I said with Annie Lou Hammer, she died on her deathbed fighting just for the right to vote. And as I was reading this, it sent chills through me because I am from the Delta. My parents worked in Indianola, Mississippi. I am from Indianola, Mississippi. So this is all familiar to me. So when I go back and read some of the things that my ancestors has gone through, and just to know that I was on the same plantation that some of these people came from, some of our ancestors came from, that makes me a stronger individual. So I'm ready to fight. I'm ready to get in it. I'm ready to educate. I'm ready to promote. I'm ready to challenge to not be that invisible person or that voiceless voice. And I hope you guys are ready for that same challenge.
Yeah, see, I like where you're going with that, Ms. Williams. And so what I want us to talk about is really how do we get that voice back? You know, because, again, this invisibility, I mean, it starts within ourselves. And so we got those negative thoughts that we have about ourselves that keep us from moving forward and speaking up. And generationally, we all know about these things. Maya Angelou talked about it. You know, turn the other cheek. Oh, this don't hurt when you hurt. You know, just really learning how not to express your emotions and how you bury those true feelings deep down. When you're being penalized almost not to be human and being that of other. That invisibility, what is that doing to the mental health? What is that doing to the identity? And how is that making some black folks hate themselves? You know, we got a lot of things going on with this invisibility because even when you're looking at education and you're bringing that component into trying to get out of it, right? Somehow you still lose a sense of your identity trying to do so. What do you guys think about that? And I'll pose that question to Ms. Williams, but I also open the lines up to our callers, just so if anyone wants to chime in on that, your line is open and I can hear.
Okay, Brother Timothy from South Philly.
Hey, Brother Timothy.
Can you hear me? Brother Timothy from Philadelphia.
Yes, very can good. Hear I can hear you. Yes.
Okay. Ladies, it's always a pleasure to come on the show with you. You do a great job. But I like the way the show opened up with the OJs from Philadelphia, Philadelphia International. They recorded here. I like the way you opened up with Maya Angelou. I also like the way you opened up with Fran Kramer. But you said something about being invisible. The invisible man, we got to talk about the invisible woman. You know, when I think about the invisible woman, I think about Breonna Taylor from Louisville, Kentucky. You know, we can't sweep the black woman under the rug. Her voice must be heard like the black man's. And when you say, when it comes to us speaking out and speaking up and being invisible, we are people that are like an alarm clock. We need a streamline of consciousness to bring us to consciousness. We go from the subconscious to the consciousness. We have to 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, always be up on the struggle. We should never let the struggle go. And I'm saying that to say that, do we got to be pinched to see if we're alive? Do we got to choke to see if we can breathe? That our narrative is, since we've been over here, is we always are going to be subject to slavery. America was a place that was stolen from the Indians, and we were put in chattel slavery. And if we look at Juneteenth, what's Juneteenth about? They had to march in Galveston in Texas to tell the people, you're free. They will never let you change off you mentally, and you got to change off you physically, some of us, if you're not incarcerated. So are you always going to be aware that if you don't come from the subconscious to the consciousness, you're a slave. You are a modern-day 2020 slave. With 2020, you're supposed to have vision. You have no vision if you're not realizing that you are in slavery. And your job is to always emancipate yourself if you have to sign your own way out of it. We have to do this as a people. We can't just do it individually. We must do it economically. We must do it politically. We must do it sociably. We must do it with our children. We must do it with the adults, the elderly. And we need land. We need production. We need all the modern things it takes to be a nation within a nation that's connected to the motherland, which is a nation, our homeland, our people. That's your struggle. We have a global struggle as black people to free ourselves mentally and physically. And that's what this is, what Juneteenth is about. People don't understand about Juneteenth. It's not just walking up and down the street to pray. It's just not having an event and a festival. It is the history of us learning. Listen to me. If it wasn't for us in the Civil War, we couldn't have marched in Galveston, Texas. It's like the Black Panther guns. It's like Frederick Douglass speaking out. It's like Harriet Tubman freeing her people. It's all about freedom, freeing your mind. I just want to add that, lady.
Thank you. And you know what? We must apologize because the women are just as important than the men. Or the bottom line is we need to include all people of color, male and female, because just like with the Fannie Lou, just like with Martin Luther King and all the other great ancestors that have led this path so we can be somewhat free, but it's up to us to obtain and maintain our own freedom at this stage of the game because they fought their fight. So now it's up to us to grab the baton and go with it.
I agree, ladies.
Okay.
Wonderful. Thank you. I'm going to reach out to caller 414-839.
Okay. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, it's Lucille. You know, this subject is really heavy because it goes through my mind over and over that we do have to educate our children. I was listening to a lot of the Juneteenth things that were said, and our kids don't know. We have to start teaching in the home that you are somebody. I remember when my 48-year-old son, I took him to the beach, and there was a white lady out there with her son. She says, go, you can do it. You're going to be president one day. So I yelled out to my son, go, you can do it. You're going to be president one day. And it's like, we have to teach our kids to have a self-pride that I am somebody because it is invisible. All these things are invisible, knowing they can happen, but they don't happen because it's like an invisible force that makes you feel inferior to anyone else. So we have to teach them that you're just as good. And if you get something thrown at you, then you know who you are. Why do you get mad about it? And then another thing right now, this critical time when we got things going on where things could really change, we need more people politically involved to put their voice in there to get a change. And if it don't happen, then it's really hard. Because I was listening to Fred Gordon this morning, and Fred made some really good stuff, really, really good information, because when he was in office, it was only like four people. But one lady was Faye Anderson. She worked so hard as a community organizer, then became an Alder Woman. This work that they have done is like, it's not even there. So it has to be passed on, because we will not have any political change if we're not there. And someone has to be there, somebody for everybody, but we have such a handful of people that not involved. And it's like, I told Leola once, well, I don't want to go to any more meetings. I don't want to hear all this. You walk away and nothing's done. So this is a very good time to get some down a voting year. And just like we need to have the mail-in votes, that gerrymandering, all that stuff, we need to fight right now like Fannie Lou did to make our voices heard. And I can't say how to do it, but everybody needs to do their part and get on that boat and sign it in. One other thing, we have a lot of black males that cannot vote, and we have women too. And so I worked it because they're on paper. That's really a big piece, but yes, they pay taxes, but they can't vote. There's another area that needs to be looked at to help all of our people get on board, because it's stagnated. So that's all I got to say, and thank you, ladies, for the program, and Dr. Rogers.
Yes. Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you for that, Miss Bennett. Thank you for that. I'm going to reach out to caller 414-748. Would you like to join in on the discussion?
Hello?
Hello, how are you?
Yes, this is Mike Brox calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Hi, Mr. Brox.
Hi.
Hello, Brother Brox.
Well, you know, wonderful show. I listened to it. Thank you for letting me in. I was listening to some of your call-ins, and I think it speaks to everybody with the same theme. We have elected officials on every level of government, yet nothing changed. Nothing changed. We continue to elect the same people, and we expect a different result. It's not going to happen. We have to take a look at who's in office, study the issues, and if the job's not getting done, we need to hold them accountable. It's just simple as that. You can't keep doing the same thing and expect a different result. So that's one thing. Yeah, the gerrymandering and all of that, but we have our elected officials. You know, they walk around like rock stars. We got to understand that they work for us. But another issue is the education. Now, we all know that there are systemic problems. You have to deal with that systematically. I hear everybody talking about, what they're learning, but we have to look at Common Core. We have to look at the state standards. We have to begin to change. That has to be changed, and not only that, what they're learning, because if it's changed on the state standard level and the Common Core is changed, that means all of the teachers. See, the problem is not just what they're learning in Milwaukee public schools, but all the teachers have to be on the same page. We need more diversity in that curriculum. That means we need to do professional development with the people who are teaching our kids and make sure that we're all on the same page. Another thing is we need to take a look at the practice test, how teachers are being certified. A disproportionate number of African Americans are not passing that test. It needs to be eliminated. We need to take a really hard look at that. I recently interviewed, I'm running for state assembly myself, but that's not the issue. What I'm talking about now is the PAC, the Political Action Committee, and how candidates are being endorsed. They're basically goose-stepping and everybody's following the same party line, which is a mistake, and it's hurting the party, the Democratic Party in general. So we need to take a look at who's involved, who's on these boards and committees for the Political Action Committee, and we need to take a strong look at candidates that are being endorsed and resourced. So having said that, I don't want to take up too much time, but thank you for taking my call, and I'll sit back and I'll enjoy the rest of your show.
Thank you, Mr. Brox.
Thank you, Mr. Brox.
Appreciate your comments.
And hello to everybody on the panel. Okay.
Thank you.
Wonderful, okay, wonderful. Thank you, Mr. Brock. Wonderful, wonderful. We got some very good panelists today. I want to just thank everyone for their contributions thus far. As we said it earlier, we all invisible, recognizing your invisibility and strategizing and how you're going to use that invisibility is really what's going to be key. And I think it's very pertinent for us to recognize we wear the mask and understand what your agenda is and how you shall move with that agenda, because everybody is not going to be for you, and they're certainly not going to be for us. And so, again, that verbal judo is going to be very important.
And that's the key. You know, we have to look at how often do you wear your mask? Every time you are faced with your boss or your supervisor, boss to me, I hate that word. I've always gotten chills when I hear that word. I don't have a boss. I might have someone that oversee me. We need to just change some of the language that we allow them to label us with altogether, because I don't have a boss. I have a supervisor, someone who can show me, who can teach me. I don't even like the word training. I'm not an animal. I'm not a monkey. I'm not a dog. I'm none of those things. But I'm open-minded enough where I'm willing to learn and I'm willing to be taught. But don't say you train me, because that, you know, sends a little nerve jerker, a jerker through my body. Certain things I cringe on, especially, you know, being from the South, being raised on a plantation, and you hear all of these words and different things like that. Certain things I don't allow people to say to me. And the thing it is, when do you find your voice? You know, this is a time not to sit back and be silent about what we need to do. Anytime you have this white man who's supposed to be the president of the United States, anytime that we, our black representatives, are sitting there in that Oval Office with him, allowing this person to say Juneteenth is famous and recognized because of him. To me, that's a problem. Even when they show the pictures and the demonstrations of how they destroyed Black Wall Street, you still have black people who are saying they agree with this president. I'm not understanding. Are they still in that enslaved mind? Is Trump paying them off? What is it? Why is it that they're still living in denial about their own strength, about their own worth, about their own power, their own indivisibility, and even what they say, like all the white people have? Trump don't give a damn about you. He want what he want, and when he gets it, he throws you under the bus. I sit there and I listen to Tim Scott, the black Republican, trying to come up with the laws for the police department and different things like that. See, I have a problem with that. You know, how much money can anybody pay you to sell your soul to the devil? How invisible are you to even allow this to go on? How can you sit there in silence knowing that you don't have laryngitis or your voice is not gone? How long do we allow this to happen to us when we know better, but too afraid to do better? When do we start holding those that look like us, some of us, accountable for being in the office and in the position that we put them in? Some got to change, because talk is cheap. But if you're not going to walk the walk, why even talk about it?
Can I say something, lady? Exactly.
Sure. You always can say something. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to say this. We're going to talk about the invisible moment for a bit. I'm going to say the invisible woman in this moment for a bit. And I'm going to say that Vice President the guy's running for president now. Oh my God! Biden said that he's going to have a running mate that's a woman. A lot of us automatically thought that she would be black. It's possible. Amy Klobuchar said she's not in the running anymore. So I kind of looked to see if he would pick a black woman. And when I look at the black women that I think that are qualified and capable, even though we might not have thought about their or have recognized all that they have done politically in the past, Senator Harris is a former DA, prosecutor. She is now a U.S. senator. She's on the list. You have Val Demings from out of Florida, former police chief, and you may have Stacey Abrams. Now, all those women are qualified. You might not like what they've done politically in the past. Does it mean or does it not mean they won't be a good vice president? In other words, you could not have been a great DA. You could have not been a great police chief, or you could have not been a person who was not elected as a governor. Doesn't mean that you could not be a good vice president. Now, I'm looking at this to say that that person, I hope it is a African-American, has to be able to run that office for 8 years. Because Biden could only look like he could only do one term. That's one thing. Now, that's one thing. That's what I think. He can help get us there, but I think that the woman has to pull that load. Now, if seeing through the eyes of a white man and a white woman, they had to feel safe with a black person being there. They had to feel like they're still in control. That's just my opinion. Now, if they look at a Kamala Harris, she's very aggressive. You know, you might not like her as a district attorney, but she knows she can handle herself with any man, any woman. We look at Val Demings. She can. She did a very good job in the impeachment trial.
Yes.
If you look at Stacey Abrams, Stacey Abrams is very savvy with her political wisdom and what she can do.
Absolutely.
What office that that she has had, I don't know too much about it. I will do some research. But I will say to you, ladies, that the invisible woman will become visible soon. Because here's the thing. Now, I'm going to say this, that you know, people don't know what the vice president's job is. They control the Senate. And they have to have knowledge of foreign policy fraud. Now, the other thing about politics, when I ran for office, people said to me, Tim, all things you don't know, you can learn as you go. So he ain't got a job. As an educator, you learn as you go. As a carpenter, plumber, a lawyer, you know, an electrician. So what do you think about the invisible woman who soon will be more visible than ever now, especially if she's in that seat as vice president? And would it be a mistake to run a vice president who's a woman? Because they'll look at her and say, I'm not voting for anybody black. And is that a losing ticket or is it a winning ticket? I'm going to ask you, what do you ladies think?
That's a good point. Good point.
Well, I think it's a winning ticket.
Wait a second, Ms. Williams. Ms. Williams, before we even answer the question, we have to talk about the hour. We were trying from the top of the hour, but we would definitely get right back to that question. How about that?
Definitely. So let's go into our break, our top of the hour break. And as soon as we get back, we will respond to that question, Mr. Tim.
The Black Theology Think Tank Weekend Edition. And this is a public service announcement. In 2008, he made history by voting. That was the year that millennials showed up and exercised one of the many milestones to adulthood. Let us make history again by being responsible for not only ourselves, but our communities. I am challenging you. Go register to vote for the upcoming November election if you haven't already. Your vote counts, and we need your help. Not only for the presidential election, but local elections as well. Please. Challenge your family and friends to do the same. Every vote counts. Yes, Black Lives Matter. It's time to make the invisible visible again. Let's be sure to educate people on their voting rights for how to register in the November election. Each one.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Thank you, my brothers and sisters. We want to, just a couple of announcements immediately after this broadcast. Well, not immediately, but at 6 o'clock. This program ends at 5, but at 6 o'clock we have a Sankofa Elders Council of Milwaukee addition to the Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition. This is a part two version of that. And today they'll be talking about Father's Day and black men as well. They're going to continue the conversation in that vein in celebration of the Father's Day. The title for that program will be Redefining Black African Manhood and Fatherhood Moving into the 21st Century. And it will be hosted by the executive director for the Sankofa Elders Council, Brother Alfonso Watkins. And so that's immediately after this program at 6 o'clock, right here on the Time for Awakening. And so we are also here on Tuesdays from 7 to 9 Central, and we are also, again, on Thursday from 6 to 8, which is Central Time as well, with a new program by a group of young millennials called After 7. And they'll be coming on talking about women and families and relationships and all kind of things that may interest the young millennial group. So please do tune into it. We also want to make reference to the fact that we have an archive, and you can access that archive at any time by going to www.timeforanawakening.com. Go to the podcast portal, pull that down, and go right into the Black Reality Think Tank, as well as the many other programs that are aired here on the timeforanawakening.com network. We have African Perspectives, which comes on every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 to 1, and we also had Time for an Awakening that comes on Friday and Sundays from 8 to 10 on Fridays and from 7 to 10 on Sundays, all Eastern time. And the African Perspectives is also Eastern time as well. So we suggest that you do listen for dynamic programs. One of the things that I just want to mention before we get in back to this dynamic talk, have many of you wondered what are our African brothers and sisters on the continent thinking about in terms of all of this catastrophic stuff that we are going through, George Floyd, the other police shootings and the consistent brutality, as well as the number 45 and his very, very erratic behavior, very, 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 very bad behavior of this man. So what do they think? Have we heard from them? Well, let me tell you, we are hearing from them. And so on this Sunday, tomorrow, Father's Day commemoration, we are going to broadcast a speech that is coming from the Honorable Nnewi Kawisi Kwarté. Kawisi Kwarté, he is the Deputy Chair of the African Union Commission. So he decided to reach out to our network of radio stations. He reached out to Okuni Kambone about hosting a talk and interaction about the historical context of enslavement and the present realities of what we continue to face as African people in the diaspora. So this is our collective opportunity to hear what a high-ranking African Union Commission official has to say about our global situation. It is also our chance to have our voice heard during this live interaction. And again, it is with the Honorable Kawisi Kwarté, and he will put the continued anti-black genocide into perspective, and he will ask the long-awaited question, what can the African Union, and indeed the African Union Commission, do to help our brothers and sisters in the Americas and in the diaspora? So we are asking you, our audience, to join us with Brother Kambone, Baba Phil Scott of the African Diaspora News Channel, Baba Shakara of the Akibalon Revivalist Movement, Baba Nigel Stewart of the Center of Pan-African Thought, and Mama Tanya Safia Ankoma of Sankofa Repatriation Assistance Exodus Alliance, and many more friends, as we relay our questions to the Honorable Kwesi Kwarteh. This program will be streaming live on the Baba Elliott Booker's program, timeforanawakening.com, and the Black Talk Radio Network, and also through a live program by abibitumi.com, and that's spelled A-B-I-B-I-T-U-M-I.com. And this will be done tomorrow at 12 o'clock Eastern, 11 o'clock Central, 11 a.m. Central, 12 o'clock noon Eastern time. And you can tune in by simply going to www.timeforanawakening.com. And this is a powerful, powerful gesture that's being made. And it's being made basically in light of the African countries on Friday called on the United Nations Human Rights Council to urgently debate racism and police brutality among the unrest in the United States and beyond over the George Floyd death. So in a letter written on behalf of 54 African countries, Burkina Faso's ambassador to the UN in Geneva asked the UN's top rights body for an urgent debate on racially inspired human rights violations, police brutality against people of all African descent, and the violence against the peaceful protests that call for these injustices to stop. So the question that the Ms. Chambers and Ms. Williams have raised today is, how do we do away with the invisibility? How do we begin to make sure that we are seen as men and women, as human beings, and as people? Well, our brothers and our sisters in the continent are coming forward to help us. So I really, really encourage you to listen tomorrow at, again, 12 o'clock Eastern, 11 o'clock Central, www.timeforanawakening.com. It will broadcast live stream, and all you need to do is log on and go to the live button and listen. I know I'll be there. So, again, we thank you for that. With that, I turn the program back over to our host, Ms. Leola Williams and Ms. LaWanda Chambers.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you for that, Dr. Rogers. This sounds really exciting, and I can't wait to listen up and hear more about this tomorrow. So I hope everyone else chimes in and listens as well. And also, please do follow up and listen to our program at 6 o'clock, and let's hear a word from our elders. Back to answer, I believe, was that Brother Timothy, was that you who we were just talking? Brother,
yes.
Timothy, can you come there?
Yes.
Wonderful.
I'm here.
So I need to leave. Great, great. I didn't want to leave you hanging on too long, and I'm so glad that you continue to wait, but I really want to answer your question. And so I
yes,
think
ma'am.
That you're right, and I see that you're right on time and aligned with what's going on. You know, that's why it's important to shift the understanding to what it means to become visible again, and what ways can you become visible again. And so one way is understanding, hey, we got a sister that's about to be on the ballot. We going to support her. All right, that would be in our best interest. But the other part of that is, does these sisters have our best interest at heart? You know, that's what we got to do. We got to educate our people on understanding that. And like I believe Brother Brock told us earlier, you know, we got to hold these politicians accountable, whoever it is in that office. So I'm really excited to see these African American women get an opportunity, and I'm hoping that they do go with either one, Ms. Harris or Ms. Demons. That would be awesome. That would be a awesome contribution to us. But again, we have to still question what's the motive behind that.
I can I say something? I'll say this. I like Demons too. Awesome. I'm gonna tell you why. I like Demons because of the climate of the country, and we look at how police are out of hand. I mean, and. You have some good police officers. I have a cousin. He's a police officer. He's a former history teacher. And he's on the force now. He's a sergeant. He wants to be a commissioner. He has a dog. And I was worried about him when he was in the district. He said to me, he said, I'm by myself. I said, you by yourself? I'm really worried. He said, Tim, I'd rather be by myself than be with another police officer. He'll tell the other police officer to get you in trouble. But he's doing okay.
But he's doing okay.
And He's doing, but I'm going to say this to you, that we need somebody that's going to handle the situation with law enforcement. Now, if we look at Stacey Abrams, I did no research on her. And when I say that, what political action she have? Was she a state senator? Was she a state legislator? Was she a council person? And what did she do in that seat? What resolution did she pass as a council person? What legislation did she sign on to when she was a legislator? Did she do H.R. 40 reparations? You know, I want to, when it comes to Stacey Abrams, I mean, the other one from California, who's a senator, Senator Harris. People say she has a terrible record when it comes to a DA. They say she doesn't, and people have a problem with who she's married to. All those things are important. But I'm going to tell you something about being on a ticket as a vice president. They're going to go through them like a fine-tooth comb, and it's just not Biden picking them. They have to look at somebody who's electable. See, even if a person has our best interest and concern, they might be the best person for us. They also look at electability. See, this thing is hard. It's not as easy as people think. So here's the other thing. When they picked Barack Obama, look at it like this. Barack Obama had a father that was African. He had a mother that was white. He was truly an African-American. And listen, he was African-American. And he was raised by his grandparents. So white folks looked at him being raised by white people. African-Americans looked at him as being African-American. And they said his father was a Muslim, too. He was able to pull the amount of people that was needed during that time period to be electable. So we got to look at all that. This is not easy. And this is a bad – listen, as bad as Trump is, Trump got it on his white skin. Isn't that terrible? He wasn't qualified, never was a war leader, never was in politics. He got elected. That's how bad America is, on his white skin. That's the truth.
And you know what, even furthermore, what's terrible is his brother sitting up here talking about he made Juneteenth popular. You know, this is what
worse than that. He said he did more for African Americans than any president. Oh my God. A man stand in front of the camera like that and lie. God, we got to get rid of him. I can't wait to November the 2nd. I'm thinking about going down to D.C. and taking him out of there now.
Hey, don't be saying that on our network. The only difference is, Brother Tim, you don't have the means or the mode, so we gonna say that you're just venting.
You just venting right now. That's what that is.
A whole lot of people. They're tearing this country up. I ain't gonna be one. If you can't, they're tearing this country up inside and out.
Hey, what we gotta do is, whomever he chooses to be the vice president, we as African Americans gotta stop being scared. We all jumped on the bandwagon to vote for Clinton president. But even in that stance, watching Hillary, she wasn't as strong as she needed to be because she didn't stand up to Trump the way she should have. I think if a black woman was forced in that position when Trump started walking back and forth, I think she would have taken a different stance with him. So I think, right. You know, I like Stacey Abrams. I like Kamala Harris, but I like Val Demings and Stacey Abrams more so than Kamala. And I say this to say what? Val Demings is strong. She don't talk loud, but her voice make a difference. You can hear it. She means what she say. Her demeanor is strong, and she take a strong stance on what she say. She's argumentative, but she argue in a respectful, strong voice. Stacey, she's strong. She know her stuff. And she's that quiet person, but a quiet person is an attacker. And I believe Trump lies because he is a pathological liar. So I believe he practiced lying while he sleeps. So even when he awake, the lie is already ready to fall out of his mouth. It's just automatic.
It's just loose.
Right. So my thing is, we as black people, we got to stop being so afraid, and we got to stop saying, what if? What if they don't? What if they do? You still got black people, even after the interview that Van Jones did with some of the people in Michigan, Philadelphia, and I couldn't believe, you know, I don't like using the N, but hey, if it fits some, it fits. That's it and that's all. So this black guy said, oh, well, Trump, what he did ain't that bad. Oh, the policing. Yeah, I don't think what he said was wrong. My thing is, it's like, what are you getting out of the deal? If you see this man choke another man with his knee on his neck and then turn around and kick him, and you say there's nothing wrong with that, my thing is, what the hell is wrong with you? You know? Yep. You see a black woman getting killed for nothing, or a young child because they said they were afraid? What does that say about you? Who do you represent? So, you know, and a lot of these people call themselves Christian. The bottom line is, if you don't stand up for truth, then why do you have a congregation that promotes lies and cover a blind eye to the facts that present themselves before you? So here it is. How can our kids understand the truth when you have people that are teaching the Bible that are not living the truth? And they are allowing this perpetuation of lies and mistreatment being brought upon you because of the color of your skin and because they want a dollar. So the life is about a dollar. It's not about living life. It's about existing in life while I make a profit off your life is the way they're playing it out. So you got to be careful about different people that you go to church with, because a lot of them, what I love, voted for Trump. I'm like, oh my goodness. I didn't see that one coming. And I don't think it's right for a pastor, for the pastor of the congregation to tell you who you should vote for anyway, or who you should support. And
and I'm certainly not going to give you that information. That's really costly. Political advice is costly. I'm just joking, you guys, but I'm not going to tell you who to vote for, but I am going to tell you to go out and vote. And with that being said, I'm going to take a call from 414-573. How you doing? Would you like to add anything to this?
Hi, are you speaking? Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. I can hear you loud and clear. How are you?
Oh, fine. I'm fine. Thank you. I've been enjoying the program, and there's been a lot of different subjects and issues raised, but I just wanted to touch on a few of them. I know we were talking about the political scene, and I just think that politically a lot of us really don't understand that political scene. I mean, we might have learned it in grade school or what have you. And then, you know, after that, we get busy with our lives and read the newspaper, and we just kind of wait and listen for the report on what politicians are doing what. And as long as people can go to work, maintain their, you know, lifestyle, basic food, shelter, clothing, vacations, what have you, Gucci purses or whatever, then people kind of like resort to, okay, I'm okay. I'm okay. And it's only when something interrupts that I'm okay that they then begin to look outside into the, you know, the political realm or organizational realm for some assistance. So I think a lot of people are kind of caught up in that. And I'll just reference it and say, I think a lot of African Americans are caught up in it. And so a lot don't understand this whole political structure. So when an African American politician comes up, we go, okay, you know, he's for us, he's like us, boom, 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 and we want to vote for them without sometimes even reading the track record or attending some of the community forums or anything like that. And we just kind of go by what we hear from what other people say. So I guess in a sense there needs to be, you know, more of that type of education in terms of when you go, before you go to the voting booth, what's the list? What's the information, the track record of these particular politicians? Now, I'm not to say that that's everyone in the community, but I'm just generalizing and saying that might be one of the reasons why, you know, for what's happening. So, okay. Then I wanted to also talk about, someone mentioned something about Juneteenth, and it's not just about marching, and although we really appreciate the fact that we can march on Juneteenth and we can visit, and here in Milwaukee, I think we have a wonderful Juneteenth celebration, but it really isn't just about walking up and down the street. Not to say that we don't, but it is about community engagement. It is about the vendors who are there. It is about supporting those vendors, small businesses. And, you know, some of the proceeds go to certain organizations that do a lot of good things in the community. So so it is kind of like a special event that that works with the community, helps the community. But there was one thing I noticed years ago, a coworker of mine who happened to be a European went to the event, came back and said, I was there. I did not see anything that was significant or told me and my daughter about what Juneteenth was about. Okay. So then we had to sit down and I had to tell her some things. Okay, fine. Now I operate I'm the director, co-founder of the King Drive Comics Gallery Studio. For years I participated with Juneteenth and even helped to coordinate the parts of the parade. But when I worked in this capacity as the museum, as the art gallery, it was essential, it was very important, top of my list, that I have in the area information about what Juneteenth is about. And to the point that I actually traveled several times to Michigan to the Jim Crow Museum and developed a network where I could bring back information and pictures, and even some of the community residents donated some of their artwork that was of Jim Crow, and information, you know, newspaper articles, things of that sort. And so it was so outstanding or so compelling that I kept it up for a whole year. And just yesterday, I had a group of young people come in, and I toured them around the gallery explaining this so that they get an understanding of the images that and the depth of how we were portrayed, the type of regard that they had towards us. So we talked about Aunt Jemima. We talked, you know, in the pancake box. We talked about, you know, Uncle Ben. I granted, Black folks back then could cook. We could cook. We were in the kitchen and we could hook up something really good. And we made a lot of good food come out of those kitchens and into supermarkets, some of them which we didn't even get credit for, as Colonel Sanders perhaps. But anyway, what I also have with that imagery was people that during that time who were, while Jim Crow was going on, people have just come out of enslavement in the 1800s. I had pictures of people who had created things, inventors, scientists, and, you know, explaining to the children that in spite of all this negativity that was happening to us, the lynching, the mob, we still had resilience, we still had fortitude, and we still had the belief and hope and faith that we were going to make a difference and that we were going to live and accomplish things, and we did that. Many of us did that. So, in essence, not to lose hope. But also, a group of people came in from Whitefish Bay, from New Berlin, who had heard about this exhibit. And the reactions that they had was, it was just unbelievable, to the point I was invited to go to a racial equality conference. They paid for my expense and everything. I went there, and this is where I want to talk about, and thank you for talking about Fannie Lou Hamer. Because while I was there, I went to the Highlander Folk House that was owned by Miles Horton. He was a white man, a European from Danish, but he had this big farm down in the foothills of Tennessee. He had all this land, and at this land, he had Eleanor Roosevelt, Dr. Martin Luther King, Fannie Lou Hamer. Let me see who else. I mean, Rosa Parks. Satima Clark. I mean, the list just goes on and on. The schools that he was teaching them, first it started with the labor movement, because, you know, we were on the trains at Pullman. And so it started with that, and then it moved into civil rights. And the thing that was so compelling about this, because they burned, during civil rights, they came and they burned off, I think there's one building still standing, the Highlander Folk House. But to find it, this lady had to go way back into the foothills of Tennessee. And I just couldn't believe it. It was just one of the most momentous things in my life to go back into those hills. And back then, in the 50s and the 60s, Black folks who named some of the names I just mentioned were there learning how to organize voter registration, learning how to march, and all around them with nothing but Ku Klux Klan members, white supremacists. And it just put me to tears. It touched my heart because I said, it's something that these people, who we don't learn about in school, only some of the great names we hear about, Rosa Parks, Dr. King. But there were so many people like Fannie Lou Hamer that sacrificed their lives, that taught and empowered other African Americans, and there were white people there too, to fight for civil rights, to fight for voter rights and registration. And they went down to Alabama, down to Mississippi. And like you said, they got beat up. They got to fight for voter rights. So I think it's just so essential that we begin to teach our children about how important it is to learn about the candidates that you're going to vote for. Learn about our history in our home. Don't just watch a television program and say that's all it is. It was a little white girl that came to my exhibit. She went back to her classroom out in New Berlin, and she said, slavery did not end. Oppression and slavery did not end with the Emancipation Proclamation. Now, I don't know. I think she was okay when she said it. I don't think they did anything to her. But, you know, just for her to be able to feel that in her heart, enough to stand in front of probably an all-white classroom and say, this is not over, was just, it just meant, you know, really something. When we have so many of our people who are, you know, unknowing. But I think a lot of it is we just want to live a simple life. We just want to have the basic lifestyle where we can not feel the racism, not feel the stress, be able to provide for our families. And because we want that so badly, a lot of us, we don't want to become activists. We don't want to get out there and fight. But if we had things that we could do, you know, if there was a list of things, maybe you're not out there protesting, but maybe you went to Dollar Tree and bought some paint and some cardboard, and you made a couple of signs and put them on your front, or you made them and donated what things can you do that will help make a difference?
Like
maybe
that.
You gave money or paid somebody, helped towards somebody's bail that was out there protesting. So we had a list of maybe what could people do that don't want to be out and out, you know, active. But even if you change how you talk to one another, even instead of saying MF or this, that, and the other, or he mugging me, if you just say, hello, brother. How you doing, brother?
How you doing? That's right.
You see what I'm saying?
It's to promote, not the hostility that
we hear in this music that downs the woman, downs the man. You talk about the invisible man, the invisible woman. The music, not only are we invisible, but if we come up to the surface, we're knocked down with all the terrible language that is referred to us as African-American people. And now I'll stop there. So we need to be more positive. But thank you for letting me express myself.
Well, thank you for your willingness to share. Go ahead, Missy.
Absolutely. I just want to thank you for that, sister, because you are right. We've moved from a collective and we're operating on this individualistic outlook, meeting those basic needs. And so folks ain't got time to get education and learn what they need to do because they're content and they like, this stuff ain't bothering me over here. The world gonna keep spinning. No matter what, I'm gonna continue to have to work hard. And I just think we have to realize that we got to work smarter at this point. If we work hard long time, it's time to work smarter. And so we got a little bit more time left. I want to get to a few more callers. We got 334-414. You want to add to the conversation?
I'm so sorry. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm tuning in late, so I'm just listening from here on out and just try to catch up with you all on next weekend.
Well, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to reach out to caller 414-759. Would you like to add to the conversation? Okay. I take it 414-759 doesn't have anything to add to the conversation.
Chambers.
Can you hear me?
Turn down your radio.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, yes, but we hear.
Let me do it a little. Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, great show, as always. I enjoy being on these shows every Saturday. I hear a lot of people talk about voting and how important it is, and it is. That is true. I just want to know how we can get to that point where everybody know that, you know, how our ancestors fought so hard for us to be able to vote in this day and time and how important it is and essential it is for us to get out to vote and how do we, you know, make that shift, especially in people of color. I know there's a lot of changes and change don't just happen overnight, but I won't. It's like you said, Ms. Chambers, we got to be smart and collective about it, but we can't just stop here. We got to keep moving forward until we see those changes that we haven't seen in the last 400 plus years. So great show, you guys, and I look forward to next week.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you for that, Ms. Laney. You have a good day. So I think we're all on the same page here with what we've been discussing. I think it's a lot of us want to see some change and kind of need to just strategize on making that change. I heard the sister earlier talking about some, well, you contribute in a way that you can contribute. If you know your legs are crowded and you can't be out there marching, go ahead and donate some water or donate to the people who are doing it so they can continue their efforts. Because what we know is they cannot stop marching. We have not yet gotten the results that we need. And yes, I do see some things happening, but I think right now those are things just to kind of keep us quiet in that bay. And I say, hey, when you recognize that they're trying to keep you quiet in that bay, that's when you keep marching and you just have to keep marching.
You know, we're doing our parts right now on this podcast, having these discussions. Want to also, I do not know the lady's name, 414-573. Can you tell me your name? Because I like to call you by your name.
Oh, Edward. You can just call me Edward.
Okay, because I don't want to be just calling you that lady. I got more respect than that for you. And so I want to make sure I address you by name. So, Ms. Edwards. Ms. Edwards was saying, you know, I like everything that you were saying, sister, especially with that education piece. And right now I'm in a process of doing some community efforts in that direction, looking to partner up with some local politicians so that they can assist me in talking with the community over there, their platform, so that we can provide some voter education to folks and give them some more information about who these different politicians are, what their roles are, what they do, how to contact them if they need help. You know, I don't know if you have a card or something where you say, hey, these are the people that are responsible for your area. And if this happens, you need to contact this person. See, they don't give you that information because, honestly, they don't want to do nothing. If they were out here wanting to do something, everybody in the neighborhood would know what their information was. They'd be sending that postcard out to your mail like they send that postcard out to your mail to donate to the police. And so we got to look at it like that. How are we going to help those people that we know don't have access to this information? We see it's a problem, so now that's when we step up to the plate and we organize. If not me, then who? That's the kind of mentality we have to have with these things. We cannot take the bystander effect approach to our lives. If we see something, we have to say something. That is our responsibility in the community. And so,
just to piggyback off of that. You know, going back and looking at, as Edwards were talking, and going back down south and looking at the things and what we learned and how Black people were challenged and met with so much violence and different things like that, they yet continued on to try to make a difference in order for the next generation and the generation after that to learn from what they tried to do. So back in the days, people lived to learn. And the information that they wanted to learn, they wanted it to carry on. They wanted to teach it to other people. But now we've reached a moment in our lives where we have to learn how to live. See, people lived to survive back then, so they learned what they needed to know in order to survive. And rather than teaching our children what they need to learn today in order to live, to teach their children, they're learning how to live. They got to watch out for the cops. They get into confrontation with the teacher because the teacher doesn't understand their culture. They call the police. The police take them into custody, or they do certain things, you know, or the kids are suspended. So that education has gone out the window. So we need to take a small portion of the people in each community and to grow a grassroots organization that starts from one block at a time, that builds on. It adds on as we go, you know, because most people are afraid to stand up. Most people are afraid to stay and speak their minds. But we got to pick the ball up, because at this point in our lives, if we have a fool in the White House who's putting a lot of people's lives at stake and risking a lot of lives and the money, what are we going to do? That means we're going to lose a lot more people than we anticipated on losing. Because a fool can't get better. A fool can only get worse. So we need to come together and support whomever Biden chooses as a running mate You know, nobody is going to be the best of the best. But Snoopy would be better than who we got right now. So that's what we're trying to do. How do we get to that point where we educate the community, those who can vote? How do we educate them on the people that would make a difference in their lives in order to vote for one? May not give them 100% of what they're looking for, but at least to look at your needs and to give you some of the support that you might need.
Exactly. Very good, Ms. Jones. Very good. And so where do we start? We start with this platform. And so if anybody on this line is interested in building those sorts of initiatives, you know, this is the time for us to say, okay, we had this discussion. Now what we're going to do next with it, you know. This ain't just a discussion to fall on deaf ears. Like I said, I've already kind of stated what my next course of action is. I'm really big on moving forward with things, very persistent, and know what I want to see happen and going to see it through. And so if I have anyone on the line that is listening, I give this email address out every week so that if you have any other ideas, things you want to say, you go ahead and use that platform to say it. Because this is how we truly connect and get things done. You know, and that email address is Ford, F-O-R-W-A-R-D, at Lyft, L-I-F-T, hyphen, I-F-E dot com. Oh, Jesus, I'm sorry. Ford at Lyft, hyphen, I-F-E, at gmail.com. Gmail.com. Ford at Lyft, hyphen, I-F-E, at gmail.com. And I challenge any of our listeners who's interested in doing some things like that to go ahead and do that, because we have to grassroots and we have to learn to work together. And that's really what that is. We got to stop working in silos and start looking at things in a collaborative process and say, this is the agenda we're going to accomplish. This goal, once this goal is accomplished, we build teams and we start building up our own community. I do believe we can absolutely recreate our own Black Wall Street, but we have to stop waiting on folks to tell us how to do it and when to do it. We got to sit down and just say, this is what it's going to be. It's that easy, folks. I'm telling you, you'd be amazed how easy that would be. We are creators. You have to remember that who you are. We are creators. And so that's what that's about. That's how we move. That's how we make the invisible visible again, by saying, I am somebody. I am somebody. And then you go out there and you be somebody. And then you get things done. That's what I'm about. Anybody that know Ms. Chambers, they know that's how I roll. I'm persistent as heck, and I say, hey, this is what I want to do. This is how I'm going to do it. You be looking at me like, really? I'll be like, it's done. Okay, it's done. That's my attitude. And so before we close out our show today, I just want to bring you guys a little bit of awareness to the Home Ownership Awareness Month. I want to remind you all about housing resources in the Milwaukee area. If you ever thought about owning a home and feel that this is impossible, I want to let you know that is possible. Feel free to reach out to the Housing Resources, Inc. at 414-461-6330. And if you're interested in any philanthropic opportunities, please feel free to visit the website at hri-wi.org/donate. That phone number is 414-461-6330. That web address is hri-wi.org/donate. Also, want to let you guys know, next Friday, myself, Lucille Bennett, John Banks, and Diffin Taylor will be doing a webinar on the 26th of June from 6 to 8 p.m. Central, where you can learn more about Zuma products and the benefits of boosting your immune system. We'll be looking at helping you to defend yourself from viruses and disease-causing bacteria. And lastly, I just want to let you guys know that I really appreciate each and every one of your support joining us here on the Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition. And I want you to feel free to support us and our continued efforts by donating to our Patreon at www.patreon.com/blacksistertalk. That's www.patreon.com/black, B-L-A-C-K, sister, S-I-S-T-A, talk, T-A-L-K. And now with that being said, I will give a closing commentary for today. Again, I appreciate each and every one of you tuning in tonight, well, today, and hope that I continue to have you join us moving forward in the weeks to come, because we are building that collective now. We're developing that judo. We're developing those values and virtues so that we can go out in the community and teach other folks. Because what it really comes down is us being the change we want to see in other people. And so that change starts with us. That change starts with our attitudes when we see one another. You know, let's greet each other and treat each other how we want to be treated. That's a simple thing to do, but sometimes it becomes rather hard. So let's pay it forward in that way and put some care back into the community. Miss Williams, would you like to add anything else for closing remarks?
Yes, ma'am. Again, I want to thank all of you guys for tuning in with us for the Black Reality Think Tank. Also, what I want to say on this end is we need to lift up Black women, Black men, Black families, Black children. We need to support each other in every which way we can. We need to be the rise of the Black voices and speak for those who have been killed unjustly by those who continue to defend their actions and taking another life at the hand of their professionalism, as they say. We need to hold our politicians accountable. That word need to go into everyone's vocabulary. Accountability. That's what you pay you for. That's how we voted you in. So without holding them accountable, we're going to continue to get played of the grants, the finances, everything that we need to support our community. We're going to fall short if we don't hold those that we elected accountable. And Mr. Brocks, I wish you luck. I promote you with what you're trying to do. I hope you win the seat that you're looking for. And Miss Lucille Bennett, thank you for showing up and being there. And all the other callers, what you brought to the table today, we need to take that and we need to bring it to the forefront. Because our ancestors has died. They've died. And they've left a legacy. They've also left a path. So we need to follow that path and get back to where our strength lies and where our faith lies. Because without faith, and if we're not standing on something solid, that means we'll fall for anything they throw at us. But again, thank you.
Yes, thank you for that, Ms. Williams. You are so right. You're so right about that. And with that being said, it's time to take action. It's time to reach one, teach one. It's time to talk to your kids and your cousins and your family and your neighbors and see what's going on. What's your plan for voting? Are you voting? Do you know how to vote? Do you know your rights? Do you want to know your rights? I mean, we all operating out here. And until we get pulled over by the law, we didn't know that was the law. You know, that's one thing we don't want to learn as we go. We don't want to learn the law as we go. We want to know that law, because what it comes down to is understanding the game for what it is and knowing the rules. And once you know how the rules to the game, you know how to win. You can play. You're a player at the table now. A lot of us ain't players at the table because we don't know the rules. We don't got the financial rules. We don't got the economic rules. We don't got none of the education is not as watered down and everything is delivered to you on the premise of what the white man says, because the white people write the books. And I'm not bashing them. I'm just telling the truth. These are facts. we got to stay objective on this so we don't lose sight of what's going on around us. That's what I think. You know, that's real serious talk, folks. We got to be mindful. We got to be vigilant out here. We can't be sitting around here laying down like, oh, I'm going to vote. Am I going to do this? Am I going to do that? I'm talking about time to prepare. Are you going to write in and send in a mail-in ballot? Or are you planning on putting a mask on, showing up to the real ballot? That's what we're talking about. What is your plan? How are you going to get this done?
The number one plan, Ms. Chambers, that I want to add on to that before we close out is make yourself visible. You are a human with flesh and bones. You have fibers. You are not an invisible person. You are important. You are powerful, and you have the strength to change the nation and change the world. If you exercise your strength and your power, we can do this because it's been done before. Because when they knock us down, absolutely, we get up, and we know this.
Exactly. And continue to come to the Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition, where you will be visible, and you will have a platform to have a voice. And we love that. This is community healing. You know, we have to speak to one another. You're not crazy. The things you're thinking about, you're not crazy. You just ain't found somebody that common understanding of what you're trying to convey. And so come to the Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition so that you can be heard. All your opinions and thoughts are valid here. I thank you for joining the Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition this week. Again, I hope you all enjoyed your Juneteenth yesterday and continue to be liberated.
Thank you, ma'am. Be blessed and be safe, everyone.
Have a wonderful rest of your weekend.
So they can help the